Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Deng Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, July 5th, 2018. An aid worker is killed along the Juba Bor Road yesterday.
We strongly condemn this senseless assault directed against civilians working to deliver humanitarian supplies to those in need in trucks that were clearly marked with the UNICEF insignia.
At least one analyst says President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar will not agree on a final peace deal in Khartoum.
I don't know that there's very much trust between the parties or around the amongst the other leaders around the table. And there's a lot more required than, you know, one, two, or a handful of elites resolving terms to a deal.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, is condemning the killing of an aid worker along the Juba Bor Road Wednesday morning. A UNICEF spokesman says unidentified gunmen opened fire on a convoy of humanitarian trucks belonging to the agency's contractor, killing a driver. As Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba, this brings the number of aid workers killed since the beginning of the year to 9.
Tim Irene, the UNICEF spokesman in South Sudan, says the agency's convoy came under attack near Mangala, approximately 75 kilometers northeast of Juba. He says the UNICEF contractors were on their way to Bor to deliver school supplies when they were assaulted.
We can confirm that on Wednesday morning, two trucks carrying UNICEF education supplies were attacked by armed men as they traveled along the Juba Bor Road. One person, an assistant driver, was killed.
Irene says such brutal attacks directed towards aid workers are unacceptable.
We strongly condemn this senseless assault directed against civilians working to deliver humanitarian supplies to those in need in trucks that were clearly marked with the UNICEF insignia.
Irene says since the start of the South Sudan conflict in 2013, there has been a rise in the number of aid workers killed in the line of duty, while others have been abducted or harassed.
Given the circumstances, the loss of the driver will be recorded as the death of an aid worker, the 9th so far this year and the 107th since this conflict began in 2013. We extend our deepest sympathies to the family of the victim.
Late last month, an identified gunman killed a peacekeeper during an attack on a United Nations convoy that was supporting the delivery of aid to the Central Equatorial Region. And we say that attack took place between Yei Town and Lasso in Yei River Estate. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A former South Sudanese civil servant is appealing to the leaders of the warring parties now meeting in Khartoum to end the conflict in South Sudan and establish good governance and rule of law. Bethuel Duku Wani says he is ready to contribute to the development of South Sudan once some government officials change their perception of people in the diaspora. Wani says South Sudan can benefit from the human resources in the diaspora if there is stability in the country.
Politicians always can disagree, and then this disagreement should not be taken as personal, as enmity, personal grudges, and then you create war out of nothing, and then make people to be killed for nothing just because of your interest. This is the mistake.
I'm sure that the people who are making decisions in South Sudan right now are your colleagues. You went to school with them. You must have even lived with them. If there's one message you would like to give them at this point, what would that message be?
Do away with this ethnic interest. Put country first and then develop a spirit of fairness to everybody who is a citizen of that country. Train people to be hardworking. Don't let people to be dependent, and then with this dependent, who becomes a leader, would say, "Oh, let me only support my people."
The continuous negotiation in Khartoum last week and possibly this week is presenting, if you like, a glimpse of hope for South Sudanese. If peace is restored in the country, what would you like to be done differently to avoid the past mistakes?
They should restructure the civil service, restructure the army, restructure the institutions, and put a proper system of work. The previous government made a mistake. There were people before who were working, who started work long, long, long time ago. They have the experience. They know how the system should be working. Now, when the government, the SPLA government came up, they said, oh, these people are jaraba. And then these people were thrown away. And then they brought people who didn't even know anything. They didn't know any system. Those were put to head departments. And then those people confused up the system. Now there is no system in the South Sudan.
And the people who would put the system right are people like you here, Uncle Wani. You're here in Australia. People, so someone will argue that, why are you not going back home to put the system right?
I was there. I went to Sudan in 2014.
That is South Sudan?
South Sudan, yes. 2014. And wanted to join my old department, Bureau of Statistics. And before I could join the Bureau of Statistics, I had wanted to be reinstated first to my old ministry in Central Equatoria, so that my all those years could be taken into account. So when I went, what happened? My open file was hidden.
Who hide it? I mean, why should they hide your file?
I didn't know. The officials who were there. So what happened? A fake information was sent to the minister. So I was a letter for my reinstatement was written to Secretariat, Council of Ministers. What they said was that I could be put to the position of Director General. But it was worth mentioning that I was due to retire in December 2015 because I was already 65 years, but I didn't reach that. I was still 60. So when I found things were not going very well, I just left that. I said, okay, it is up to you. If you don't want me to come back, that means you are depriving the country from this brain, this knowledge. So I'm going back. So if I'm given the chance, I can go back and help. Because that is my country. I want it to develop so that everybody also enjoys the fruits of development. We had been underdeveloped for quite a long time. So now that we have got the independent, we should also develop ourselves.
That's Bethuel Duku Wani, a former senior South Sudanese civil servant. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza earlier this week in Melbourne, Australia. The Deputy Secretary General of the United Nations says South Sudan absolutely needs peace to end pain and anguish of women now. Amina Mohammed says the UN and the world will not give up on South Sudan. And the visiting UN chief says more women in South Sudan must participate in government. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Juba.
Amina Mohammed, the Deputy Secretary General of the United Nations, led a delegation to South Sudan, a delegation that included Binita Diop, the African Union's Special Envoy on Women, Peace and Security, and Beyence Gawanas, the Secretary General's Special Advisor on Africa. Mohammed told reporters at a press conference in Juba yesterday that South Sudanese have suffered for far too long in the nearly five-year conflict.
The delegation heard the pain and anguish of many women, and that's the gender-based violence, and in particular, the rape. And this rape doesn't stop at just women, it also includes children to very, very young ages, as we heard, and that for us has been abhorrent. It's a horror story when you hear it. Let's imagine when you have to go through that.
Mohammed says South Sudan needs peace now more than ever, and that the anguish and horrors caused by the conflict must end.
That peace is absolutely necessary now, and that peace has to be consolidated in the accord, and that it should be a process that is as inclusive as possible. So we welcomed Khartoum, but we need to see a positive culmination of that, and that it leads into an important part of what will sustain this accord, and that is the day after. What are the plans then for us to support South Sudan, and what will the leadership and the government of South Sudan put in place as very serious building blocks and we would say confidence-building measures for the people of South Sudan and for the international community to support?
Mohamed says the war in South Sudan has left women in South Sudan lost hope, which he says must be restored.
We saw the pain and the anguish from women who live with this day in, day out, and it doesn't stop. It goes on even as we speak. Hope is the commodity of the United Nations. We have to keep that alive. We can never give up on the Sudanese, South Sudanese people. That is why this delegation is here, to constantly remind the world that these problems are not over, they are urgent, and we need to deal with them now.
Mohamed says women in South Sudan need to be encouraged to participate in the peace process. Benita Diop, AU Special Envoy on Women, Peace and Security, says nothing can change the justice system in South Sudan unless the rural court system is strengthened. But Diop says in order to do that, perpetrators of sexual violence must be held accountable.
Let's put mobile clinic from one place to another, legal services in rural areas, because if justice is not done, if justice even at that local level, I think building peace will be very difficult.
The visiting delegation went to the UN camps in Malakal, Wau and Bentiu, and had scheduled several meetings with religious leaders, government officials, civil society, and the humanitarian agencies in the country. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The Muslim community in the Jonglei state capital, Bor, is accusing local officials of grabbing part of the land on which their mosque stands and allotting it to individuals. But a state government official says the government will ensure the land is returned to the Muslim community. Dengai Deng has this story for VOA from Bor.
The Secretary General of the Islamic Council in Jonglei state, Ibrahim Gu, says Muslims in Bor are unhappy about the land situation.
We discovered later that part of mosque have been released to individuals. This is a part of violations against religious diversity according to the Constitution of South Sudan. Somebody is claiming eastern part of mosque. As he said that he's an investor, he have been given that that land since 2014. Another thing, there is a southern part of mosque been given to somebody, unknown somebody. After that, we don't know who is that guy, because a surveyor refused to give us his name details. He told us that you go to His Excellency Deputy Governor. He's the one who knows his details.
Geu says if the state government wanted the mosque land for other purposes, it should have allocated the Muslim community another location to build the mosque. Geu says Jonglei state officials also grabbed land meant for an Islamic school and gave it to another person.
This part of land of mosque, part of it is belong to a school. It belong to primary school. This land has been withdrawn from Muslims. We don't know. We have to ask the government why.
Last month, South Sudan President Salva Kiir ordered the National Security Service to ensure that property seized from Muslim community are given back. Geu says the president's order should not only be implemented in Juba, but also in other parts of the country.
His Excellency President of the Republic of South Sudan is issued order that all Muslim community territories must be given to them. We hope that should be implemented here in Bor town. I also urge His Excellency Governor of Jonglei State to implement orders of His Excellency President.
Atong Kwal, the Jonglei State Information Minister, acknowledges that the state government has taken some land and allotted it to others, but she denies that the government targeted land owned by the Muslim community.
Muslim communities are our brothers, so we are all citizens of Jonglei State, citizens of South Sudan. Therefore, the issue has been politicized, but the other areas that are affected they are near the mosque, but it's not the mosque itself, and it's not the immediate Maidan where they do their occasions.
Kwal says the Jonglei state government is working to implement President Kiir's order to return land to the Muslim community.
Jonglei state is part of South Sudan, and if it's something that has been decided by the president, and then obviously we will all comply to that order. And it will come with exceptions, it will come with how it will be done and what should not be done. So obviously, there will be guidelines that will be followed to implement that. So I believe it just needs a follow-up.
Kwal says the Jonglei government is investigating how the Bor Mosque land was taken away. She says if investigations find that the land was taken improperly, the state government will revoke the ownership of the land. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding reporting in Bor.
Tune to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, find out why one analyst says President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar will not agree on a final peace deal in Khartoum.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Name one skill you think everyone should learn.
I think everyone should learn to read. Yeah, because I don't think life is even possible without reading.
Know how to cook and also learn how to ride bicycles.
What I can say is a big skill is agriculture. When a person is supporting an agricultural process, if you are digging and you have a garden, you use that to attract for cultivation. I can say it is a good skill.
Everyone should know how to drive in case of emergency. You have your friend sick or your mother sick, so you can drive faster to go to the hospital.
If everyone has the skill of listening, there will be no conflict. We don't listen, we just talk.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. An analyst says President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar will not agree on a final peace deal at their talks in Khartoum. Matthew LaRiche, assistant professor of global studies at Ohio State University, says the two men simply don't trust each other.
I don't know that there's very much trust between the parties or around the amongst the other leaders around the table. I mean, there's a lot more required than, you know, one, two, or a handful of elites resolving terms to a deal. So
you're talking about the other opposition parties that need to be...
Well, not the opposition parties. I mean, you know, we have a proliferation of groups. We have a system in South Sudan, a conflict system that continues to see groups proliferate to gain access to authority, to power, to resources. And so the result, a much broader process is needed. You know, it's really the challenge here really is the approach. And then after that, we could start talking about some of the specifics.
When you say it's really about the approach, a lot of people have said in the past that you need to address the root causes of the problem, of the conflict, or nothing will be solved. Is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about other things?
Well, I mean, so there are fundamental problems, and so whether you call them root causes or, you know, or dynamic causes or the factors that drive the conflict, you know, you do need to get to the essence of those. And to get to the essence of those is, you know, you have to look at, you know, who are the people that are needed to be able to deal with that. And this conflict is so multifaceted and has so many layers to it that, you know, you require, you know, such a broad set of inclusion that I think mediators and those involved in peace process to date really are struggling. What is the mechanism that we can do peace processes in South Sudan to have that kind of sustainable peace and not default back to, you know, what's been the way, you know, states create themselves in the past, which is fundamentally largely violent.
Is it within the realm of possibility that some kind of transitional government is formed without either President Kiir or Machar?
Well, I mean, I don't see how it's possible. You know, the two of them are significant figures. Salva Kiir is a sitting president, and, you know, regardless of you know, one's opinions of him, you know, he does hold legitimacy amongst, you know, regional players and you know, a significant body of people. So, you know, I don't see how they can be excluded. I know lots of people have proposed the idea of creating a transitional mechanism that leads to an election or some sort of process whereby none of the people who are currently involved at the very top are involved after that, which sounds nice and interesting, but again, I don't know how practical that is given the track record and given the significance and power that a lot of these individuals hold.
Well, one of the major contentious issues that is still existing, obviously, between Machar and Kiir is the idea of power sharing and how that would break down. The opposition groups, not only the SPLM-IO, are demanding more positions in power of government. Do you think that this is something that they will be able to solve while they're still talking in Khartoum?
Well, I mean, and that equation, and then, you know, the fundamental idea that you're going to do a power sharing arrangement is still sort of, you know, at the crux of the problem that needs to be resolved, which the recent deal, of course, didn't really address. It sort of kicked that can down the road and said, well, you know, that'll get resolved later in the bridging arrangement. I don't see how the government really is going to hand them more. The government is in has been successful in its military campaign. They're in a relatively strong position on the ground. So it doesn't seem like any of these parties really has the kind of pressure on them, you know, that would compel them to budge on their positions.
That's Matthew LaRiche, director of the Global Leadership Center and assistant professor of global studies at Ohio University, speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam from Athens, Ohio. In part two of the interview, LaRiche talks about the government's proposed amendment to extend the terms of office for President Kiir and members of parliament for another 3 years. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayd Raad Al Hussein, warns numerous violations of human rights by the DR Congo government against its citizens raise serious doubts about the credibility of the country's long-delayed elections, now scheduled at the end of this year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the High Commissioner expressed his misgivings to the UN Human Rights Council this week.
Violent protests have broken out sporadically in Democratic Republic of Congo since President Joseph Kabila failed to give up power when his mandate ended December 2016. Presidential elections are supposed to take place on December 23rd. But UN Rights Chief Zayd Raad Al Hussein says Congo's government has not implemented the confidence-building measures laid out in a political agreement at the end of 2016. These include the respect of people's rights of freedom of opinion, expression, and peaceful assembly, the release of all political prisoners, and holding human rights violators accountable for their actions.
Intimidation of human rights activists and journalists has intensified, with many suffering regular threats to their lives and families. Multiple cases of arbitrary arrests and detention by the security forces continue to be documented by the UN Joint Human Rights Office. Lengthy incommunicado detentions by intelligence services without judicial review are another matter of great concern and should be prohibited.
Zayd is calling for the government to prevent a further erosion of people's rights as the country moves toward landmark elections. He urges the government to fully implement its commitments under the 2016 agreement, including the release of all political prisoners. DRC Minister of Human Rights Marie-Ange Mushubekwa confirms that presidential, national, and local elections will be held on December 23rd. She says the electoral process is underway and is irreversible. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Zimbabwe Defense Forces say they will be neutral and will not be directly involved in the running of this month's election. The statement has generated mixed feelings in the country. Reporter Kudzai Vinavashi has more details from Harare.
Colonel Overson Mukwisi, head of public relations for the Zimbabwe Defense Forces, explained the military's role in the elections.
Members of the public
should be made aware that the Zimbabwe Defense Forces has no direct role in the upcoming harmonized elections. Our role in the elections is mainly to support the Zimbabwe Republic Police in their role of maintenance of law and order in the country before, during, and after the harmonized elections.
Mugwisi said Wednesday, the Defense Forces remain ready to assist the Electoral Commission with transportation when and where necessary. He rejected reports that the forces were involved in politics and the army had been sent out to rural areas. Political analyst Rashid Mukundu is doubtful about that statement.
I don't think the army is being honest by saying that they will be neutral, because as we heard yesterday, the army failed to respond to the question as to why they participated and in fact managed logistically the ZANU-PF primary elections, deploying helicopters, army personnel and vehicles to participate in the ZANU-PF primary elections.
Although the country's constitution requires the military to be politically neutral, most Zimbabweans think the army has been instrumental in ZANU-PF's long rule. Mukundu says it's impossible for the army to be neutral, given that it forced out President Robert Mugabe last year, ending his 37 years at the head of the nation. The military approved former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa as Mugabe's replacement, and Mnangagwa is ZANU-PF's presidential candidate.
So how on earth are they going to be neutral when one of theirs, Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, is a part of the electoral campaign, when one of theirs, whom they put in office, Emmerson Mnangagwa, is part of the process? So there's no way that this army is neutral.
Christine Chinoperekwe is a Harare resident. She says she does not believe the statement by the army.
It's just a statement for the media. Otherwise, we all know that they follow the orders that they get from the ruling party.
The military statement came as some opposition supporters have complained that soldiers are working at the Electoral Commission, although the commission has called that accusation unfounded. Zimbabwe holds its election without Mugabe on July 30th. At least 20 candidates are challenging Mnangagwa in the presidential race. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song "Could You Be Loved" by Bob Marley. Bob Marley with the song "Could You Be Loved." I'm Ayen Dangbuer in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Don't let them change, yeah.